If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to District Baseball. It is a very special episode as we are covering the MLB draft today. And if we're covering MLB draft, if we're talking prospects, if we're talking college baseball, there's nobody better to do it than my good friend Monty. Monty, what's going on? Welcome back to sort of the show. It's kind of a new iteration of the show that once was, but glad to have you back and glad to have you on the show.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Exciting times in MLB draft time coming up, and we got, you know, a pretty fun draft. Apologies if you hear my dogs in the background. Cammy just decided to pick up a toy that he hasn't touched in months. So,
well, I mean, it's kind of Hammy's return to the show too. So he's just a little excited.
But
you had quite the exciting season covering college baseball, specifically for the ACC. What was that like? And obviously getting to go to Omaha as well.
Yeah, it's been an incredible season covering college baseball, specifically the ACC. I went to almost 70 baseball games. Most of these guys in the draft I saw at least once in person. So in terms of the college guys, so it's been really, really fun, and getting to see these guys in person and getting to know some of them is pretty special, to kind of learn who they are as individuals and what their stories are, and seeing what they can do at the college level.
Yeah, for sure. And, you and I were talking, you know, throughout the season, but it was really cool. You know, for me to, and I'm sure it's even cooler for you to like see how much access you really got, because, you know, if you're an MLB reporter or even like college football, you know, the access is sort of limited. It's like limited to press conferences, but you were kind of like in the dugouts and on the field with the guys and really, you know, I'm sure building relationships and getting to know them. What was that like, just kind of almost going like 0 to 100 in terms of coverage and just getting the real, you know, inside scoop?
Yeah, it's pretty surreal to be down, especially in Omaha, where there's 25,000 people pouring into the stadium. So it's like it's pretty legit. But you know, just sitting down there, and just one of the videos I think I shared on Instagram and Twitter was, you know, the Florida State guys just kind of staying loose before a game, and they were trying to bounce the ball onto the step, and just watching them really get into it, and then. You know, what the backup catcher comes over and nails it in his first try. It was pretty funny, but it's really cool to get to know them. And you know, I've built a lot of memes, and they've really enjoyed that. So, you know, one of the interviews I was asking is, you know, who doesn't have a meme, who should have one? And, you know, they were giving me advice. Jamie Arnold, who's going to be one of the top arms in next year's draft. He was really excited about the, his is an easy one, right? His name's Jamie Arnold. So I said, right, I'm going to make a Hey Arnold meme for you. And he loves that. So it's been really cool to get that kind of access, you know, and talk to these guys and get to know them. And these are kids. I think it's easy to forget that these are young adults who they often seem like they have their stuff together, but they're still, you know, young adults. And it's just very impressive. And the one that gets me is when I end up interviewing like a freshman who's 19, 18, 19 years old, and he's like 6'5". That always makes me feel really strange. Like this 18, 19 year old feels like a grown up compared to me, 'cause he's like 6'5", 220.
Exactly.
But it's been great. And especially getting to see some guys like Pace Burns in person, interviewing him and seeing his personality is off the field is a lot of fun.
Yeah. A couple of ACC guys that are going to be in contention, certainly in the top 10, top five conversation, but, for the Nats at 10 as well, we're going to kind of combine this episode, talk general MLB draft, because obviously there's a lot that goes into play beyond just what the Nats do. But also we'll kind of talk a little bit more on the Nats and what options they may have at 10 and what kind of talent they will be looking for. But we'll start right at the top. You know, the teams matter to some extent, but generally speaking, you see a lot of best player available, or, you know, less, you know, concern about what position they play, because obviously they have to make it through the minors first, and then who knows what the major league roster looks like at that time. But at the top, it's really a two-horse race. Do you have a set number one in your mind, or is it kind of like dealer's choice between Bizana and Condon?
It's probably dealer's choice, but the tricky thing is because of the Pac-12 network situation, rest in peace. I didn't get to see Travis Bizana as much as I would have liked.
Yeah.
Because true. I wasn't able to see that. I know he's very, very good, and I've seen a lot of highlights, but I've seen Condon a lot, because Georgia is an East Coast school, and he's just unbelievable. I watched him with Team USA last year, and he is a grown man. I don't understand how he was kind of overlooked a little bit coming out of high school. He was still pretty highly recruited, but like, he didn't get onto Georgia's campus and play right away. He was actually a redshirt, which is unusual. But I'm a big fan of either one. I don't think you can really miss. And you got to go with one of the bats if you're the Guardians, especially given their track record developing pitchers wherever they draft them. So, but yeah, I think it's dealer's choice. But if I'm personally going, just because I've seen Condon more, I'd be more comfortable going with Condon, just because I've watched him more, and I feel a little bit safer with him. But at the same time, I don't know what position he'd play at the big league level. He played third base a lot, and then I think he played a little bit of center field this year as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, and I certainly haven't covered or been plugged into college baseball as much as you have, but I think the one thing Condon has going for him is he kind of plays a more premier position, whether that's, it seems like it'll be third base, it could be outfield, I guess, whereas Bizana plays second base, and that's not typically what you see at the top of the draft, not that there's anything wrong with it, and certainly every team needs a second baseman. But right. That power profile Condon has is just, it's something special for sure.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, as you go, even, I mean, looking at the top nine guys, if any of those guys drop, I mean, I know I'm getting ahead of our conversation here, I'd be feeling pretty good about any of those nine guys.
Oh man. And yeah, we'll certainly get into that, 'cause that's like best case scenario is one of those guys drops due to teams going underslot. I'm hoping there's a run on underslot guys, and you know, you just see one of these top seven ish prospects, depending on your outlet, falls to 10 and the Nats can just, you know, scoop them up. But yeah, it seems a pretty clear cut one and two, just depends on the order. After that, you kind of get into the decision. Certainly whether it's the Guardians at one or the Reds at two, they could go under slot. It seems like it'll be clear cut, but they could go under slot or take a guy, you know, whether it's a top arm or someone else. But after that, it seems like the draft sort of starts at three, like whether it just be your prospect rankings or the draft itself. Where do you have the arms compared to the next college bats? Because it seems like the prep bats are a little bit farther down in the consensus rankings. Where do you have the college arms and who's your top college arm?
So it's going to be a tricky answer to that because my top college arm is going to be Chase Burns. I think he's got the highest ceiling of the three main arms. It's going to be Hagen Smith, Chase Burns, and Treya Savage out of East Carolina. I think Hagen Smith's probably your safest one. I think he's probably got the lowest ceiling, and Chase Burns has the highest ceiling. Watching Chase Burns this season, I was lucky enough to see him live four or five times this year, and he is electric. And he's throwing almost 100 miles an hour fastball. But then, you know, the big difference going from Tennessee to Wake Forest is at Tennessee he was mainly a two-pitch pitcher, and he did dominate the SEC as a freshman, and then didn't do so well as a sophomore, but as a junior going to the ACC, a very good ACC, mind you, he was just absolutely dominant ACC pitcher of the year. Four pitches. He can mix in the slider. Obviously, fastball slider is two best, but he's developed that changeup and the curveball to go along with it. So he's a complete pitcher. It's just, again, he might need a little bit more development and attention than maybe a Hagen Smith or a Treya Savage. But all three of those guys are just absolutely filthy.
So I know with Savage in particular, and again, we'll bring him up here a little bit later, but do you consider Savage on the same tier as those top two, or is there a tier break between Smith and Burns and then Savage?
I think he's on the same tier. He's going to be a stud. I got to see him not this season, but last year I got to see him for both Team USA and in the regional, because East Carolina was at the Charlottesville Regional, which I was covering. And he is a special pitcher. And you know, how he ended up in East Carolina, it's really great for them. But he's a special pitcher. And just some of the things he was doing even this year before the unfortunate injury at the end of the season was really, really special. And he's definitely on that tier in terms of like a pro career. I think he's definitely on that tier with Burns and Hagen Smith.
Yeah, seeing Savage in particular, I mean, obviously Smith has kind of really elevated himself this year. Burns has pretty much always been, you know, considered one of the top arms in the draft. But Savage in particular, going from reliever to starter and really refining his craft and kind of getting some of those control issues under control, no pun intended, that's super promising. So I like his stuff as well. Real quick, just the other college bats right there in the top five, specifically Caglione and Weatherholt. Both, I would say Weatherholt has really elevated his stock this year. Caglione was kind of like up and down, just depends who you talk to, but then he put up an arguably even better campaign this past year than he did in 2023, and I think that kind of solidified or quelled a lot of concerns. What are your thoughts on those two guys, you know, as it relates to their ability to be good pros?
Cags is a hitter, man. Yeah. He is very similar to Condon in his ability to hit for power. It was interesting. I think basically if he put the ball in the air, it was pretty much going out. I think he it's some sort of ridiculously low amount of doubles for somebody who hits for power. Cause you know, and there was even a time where Texas A&M was playing Florida. Actually, I'm trying to remember if this was Cags or Condon. It might've been, I can't remember whether Texas A&M did this to Georgia or Florida, but whether it was Cags or Condon, it's still a pretty good story. They put a fourth guy in the outfield. It didn't matter. He hit a home run. Like, you know, and so the next time they played, and I think it was Florida because they played in the College World Series, yeah. And Texas A&M was like, yeah, we're not going to do, we're just going to play him straight up. And I still think he hit a home run in that game as well. He's just an absolute machine. I don't think his pitching was ever going to reach that. And it's pretty raw still. He didn't have the best season. So if you want to develop him as a pitcher, he'd be a little bit more raw. He kind of, you know, I think his bat's too important. And I think he's up there, not quite on the same tier as Condon and Bazana, but he's definitely warranted, you know, being up there with Weatherholt. And Weatherholt, he was injured some of the year. I want to say he only played in about 25 to 30 games. And it was a big difference, though, because West Virginia was not a tournament team, I think, until he returned from injury, and he was absolutely sensational. Mm-hmm. And he can play shortstop, second base, probably a second base at the next level, but that's what you're going to see here is the college shortstop list here is not very deep. Most of these guys that are going to be listed at shortstop are going to probably be second baseman at the next level. Griff O'Farrell's probably one of the few. Kalen Culpepper could as well, Kansas State guy, but for the most part, not a lot of college shortstops that will stay at shortstop at the next level.
Yeah, it kind of seems that way. Like, just again, without having been plugged in too much to all these names, it kind of seems like there's a lot of, yeah, they're shortstops right now, but they're probably second base at the next level, which might, you know, to my point earlier, might make Bezzana, obviously there's plenty of reasons to like him, but it might make people not care so much about the second base thing because there's not like a super deep shortstop class or anything like that. Right. Yeah. So that's the top six. Those are, you know, they're basically all going to go in the top eight. I don't think anyone gets past eight. I think that's kind of the safe floor for those top six names to go. And then for me personally, there is a kind of a tier break. I know you said Yusavage is in that tier of top arms, which makes me giddy because he should be available at number 10, or at least be in consideration at number 10. But now shifting more towards the kind of the Nats segment, there's a list of like probably five names if you're wanting to go, you know, at slot value, so to speak, whether it's slightly above, slightly below. And then, you know, we can talk about underslot options here in a minute. But that really leaves guys like Nick Kurtz and Braden Montgomery as the best college bats available. Connor Griffin, Bryce Rayner, who are the best prep bats available, who we can talk about. And then Yusavage, who we mentioned. Of those five, is there someone who really stands out to you as an option for the Nats?
Nick Kurtz is an unbelievable hitter. I'm a big, big fan of his. He's dropped a little bit. He was expected to, yeah, you know, at the beginning of the season, he was
like fourth.
A lot of people had him go into the Reds, joining his former teammate, Rhett Lauder, who Josh got mm-hmm. drafted there last year. And, you know, he's very, very good when he was a little streaky this season, but there was a time where he hit, I think, 8 home runs in like 7 days.
That'll play.
He's a very patient hitter. Like, even when he slumps, he walks. I hate saying this because it's a stupid thing to say, but there's almost times where he's too patient, which is mm-hmm. not a thing. Like, that shouldn't be a problem. Like, oh, he walks too much. That's not a thing.
Yeah.
But
I know what you mean, though. It's kind of like the Juan Soto thing where he almost had like too good of a, like from Juan Soto 2022, I think it was, where he, too good of an understanding of the strike zone. It wasn't being aggressive enough.
Right. If I could, a lot of people were like, if I could, you know, combine Nick Kurtz with his teammate Seaver King, who's pretty aggressive mm-hmm. with that bat speed, you'd have like the perfect baseball player. Because, you know, Nick Kurtz, I don't know if he ever swings at the first pitch. You know, you got to at least swing at some of those to ambush him, but I'm a big fan of his. Braden Montgomery is a star. I don't know as much about the prep guys, but for the Nats, I'm not a big fan of going with the prep guys right now with the way the development's going and with the way the window is starting to open a little bit. I think you might want to, you know, just you can get somebody that can come up quicker, and that's a free agent, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not as keen on the Nats taking a prep bat. I wouldn't be that disappointed other than the fact that I cover a lot of these college guys, and I'm excited whichever one of the guys the Nats take. And if they take a prep guy that I haven't really dealt with, I'll be a little less excited, but that's just for personal reasons.
For sure. Yeah. So with I think I'm not all in on Kurtz, but if that's the pick, I'm super, super happy for multiple reasons. One, I think Kurtz is a really good prospect. Before we move off of him, what are your thoughts on his defense? Because I see some people saying, oh, he's fine, you know, because first base isn't like a premier defensive position. And then I see a lot of, he needs a lot of work before he's average at first base. What do you think of Kurtz defensively?
I've seen him make some really amazing defensive plays. So I'm not sure where the defensive issues are coming from. There was a critical play in the ACC tournament that he makes that a lot of people were questioning the runner, because there was a ball that sailed past the second baseman coming in from the outfield, and the guy on second went to third, and Kurtz wasn't even supposed to be over there. He was over where the second baseman would be between first and second base, and he fielded it and threw the guy out at third base, and everyone focused on why would he run on, you know, from second to third. But really, like, I mean, how many first basemen are making that play?
Right. And that's kind of like what you're taught to do, is a ground ball the other way. You take the extra bag.
Right. And again, that's just somebody also that's just smart enough baseball IQ wise to know where to be to back up. Cause like he knows he needs to back up somewhere, but it's not necessarily one that you're trained to do. And he just kind of was in the right place and was able to make a play in a very, I can't remember if that was in the extra inning of portion of that game or not, but very critical. You know, that game was determining who was going to the ACC semifinals or not. And it was very tight. One of the best games I went to all year. And that defensive play really stood out to me, even though, you know, that game, everyone's going to talk about Nick Kurtz tying the game clutch late. And everyone's going to be talking about Chase Burns starting the game and being clutch and Vance Honeycutt. But that defensive play really stood out to me. So I saw him make a bunch of defensive plays. I thought he was a very good college first baseman. So I can't imagine being a very good college first baseman translates to being a below average pro prospect in terms of defense. So I think he'll be fine.
Cool. Well, that's great to hear. Not that we needed an elevator pitch for Nick Kurtz, but it's nice to have one. As far as the outfielders go, we'll throw obviously Braden Montgomery in there. And then we can even go down a little bit further. James Tibbs, ACC guy as well. It's kind of a loose argument in terms of outfield, because everyone's going to say, well, the Nats are good on outfielders, and they might be, but it, you know, they're kind of in a position where they should take best player available regardless of position. But say you do care about that, you do have some concerns about yet another outfielder. What's the elevator pitch for Braden Montgomery and then James Tibbs as well?
So Braden Montgomery, I know some people might be concerned about his injury. They shouldn't be. I don't think he's actually dropped at all because of that. He's a very, very good two-way player. Obviously just an outfield now, but he's got some pop. He had a lot of home runs. I know he had an interesting strikeout rate a bit in the SEC, which is a little bit scary when we're talking about the Nats and their ability to develop guys with high strikeout rates. So that's a little worrisome. It really depends on what team drafts him in that term. I think Source was talking to somebody about it, and I remember seeing something like he struck out, I think, 25% of the time in SEC play, which is not ideal. But, you know, a certain team can work with that. I'm just not sure if the Nationals can, given what the problems they're having with Elijah Green. Now, Elijah Green struggles at a much lower level because he was struggling. He had a terrible strikeout rate in high school. So that's a bit different from 25% in the SEC. But if you're looking at James Tibbs, that's a guy. I love James Tibbs. I as the season ended, and I can't remember how late it got into the tournament, but the season ended, he had more home runs than strikeouts.
That'll play too.
Yeah. So this is, and he walks a lot. So, he didn't finish that way because he struck out a bunch in Omaha in one game. I remember I was doing the scorecard and I was like, ooh, that's – I think it ended up being like, you know, 28 home runs to 33 strikeouts or something like that. But still, insane because he's playing in a top conference in college baseball. And he can play first base. I mean, he played a little bit of first base his sophomore and I want to say freshman year. Obviously not at all this year, but he's got a really, really good bat. So if we're talking about the Nationals – I prefer Tibbs over Montgomery just because of, you know, our fear of the Nats and the strikeouts and everything. But if you're a different team that doesn't necessarily scare away, I don't think you can go wrong with Braden Montgomery.
I was kind of feeling that way about Tibbs, especially after, you know, seeing the postseason, so to speak, and just how he performed. And obviously, you know, watching your coverage of the ACC and that Florida State team in general. So Tibbs is someone I'm rising on personally, not that my opinion matters too much in terms of what the Nationals will actually do. So let's, you know, put this to the test. we're I'm just using the, you know, MLB top prospect rankings. Let's say it's chalk. The top nine are gone by the time the Nats are on the clock at 10. That leaves Bryce Rainer, who I think we both agree would be a fine pick, but it's a prep bat, and the Nats are not the most proven commodity in terms of developing prep bats. They probably need someone.
And I know they've changed, but yeah, but it's hard to say. We haven't seen the fruits of that labor yet.
For sure. And like, if anything, it seems like the pitching side of the entire system, not just the majors, obviously they're having major success in the major leagues. But the pitching side is having a lot more, you know, development progress than the hitting side. That still needs work. Even a guy like Brady House, who just got promoted to AAA, you know, he didn't have the best numbers at AA. So the prep bats do kind of scare me a little bit. So Bryce Rainer's there at 10. He would be, you know, what the big board tells you to do. But you Savage is there. Tibbs is there. I assume you have you wouldn't go any further than that. So if you're on the clock at 10, you're making the decision. Who's the pick?
It's tough, because I would actually possibly go a little bit farther than that with Christian Moore and Cam Smith.
Oh, nice. Okay. Talk about him. I wasn't sure if you, I guess they're, you know, Cam Smith, the ACC guy as well. Christian Moore, recent champion.
Yeah. Watching Christian Moore in Omaha was unbelievable. I mean, he hit the cycle off Jamie Arnold before the sixth inning. So,
He did it. I forgot about that.
Well, it was somebody, he hit the double, and somebody was like, he just hit for the cycle. I'm like, what? It's the sixth inning. But Cam Smith, I really, really like the way that he came into this season. So as a fresh, he's a draft eligible sophomore, so he's only got 2 years of college experience. But as a freshman, he had good, decent numbers, but he didn't blow anybody off the page like he was expected to, because he was a high prospect. And he went to the Cape Cod League in Massachusetts during the summer to really work on that, and he was outstanding there. He really honed his craft, and he comes back, almost hits 400. He hits the crap out of every ball. When I was watching during the ACC tournament, we had some access to the Statcast, and everything he hit was over 100 miles an hour. It doesn't matter whether it was a ground out or not. I don't know if he's going to be a third baseman at the next level. There were some questions about his defense. He's definitely got the arm strength, but does he have the range? And you know, depending on how quickly you want that bat to come up, he might be a future first baseman. I would not necessarily count him out at 10. And then Christian Moore, it's just hard to deny what he continues to do. And he's skyrocketed up the draft board, and you know, until the last couple of weeks, what he did in Omaha, but I think basically has put him in the top 15 conversation. So it's hard to ignore that. He's got a lot of pop, and just, he's just a dude. Like, you know what he's just got that it factor.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy. why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
Wayfair's Labor Day clearance is back, and we're bringing end-of-summer deals right to your doorstep. Now through September 3rd, score up to 70% off all things home. Get in on low prices while temperatures are still high, like up to 70% off rugs, up to 50% off bedroom furniture, up to 50% off dining furniture, and up to 60% off living room seating. And the savings don't stop there. End summer with can't-miss surprise flash deals, all with fast shipping right to your doorstep. Save big on everything you need, with every style, for every home, for every budget. Modern? Check. Classic? Check. Coastal grandma with a hint of boho glam? Check and check. Wayfair's got everything you need to make your home way more you. Shop Wayfair's Labor Day clearance now through September 3rd for up to 70% off. Because at Wayfair, new season means new savings.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to disagree with you. I mean, I can't disagree with you. Both what they did when, you know, their teams needed them most just kind of shows what kind of prospects they are, what kind of players they are. But here you are on the clock at 10. What's the pick?
Okay. You know, I'm probably going to go Tibbs. We're assuming nobody
is interesting, and I love it.
If we're not going chalk, give me James Tibbs. The thing is I'm not Mike Rizzo. And I think Mike Rizzo's going to have a real hard time not taking Tregus Savage, which I would also be fine with. But we know he was kind of peeved about not being able to pick Paul Skeens.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, even though we don't, you know, we were all pretty happy to get Cruz. I think he's going to have trouble resisting that urge to take Tregus Savage. If he does, though, that's not a problem at all. I'm excited about Tregus Savage, but. But yeah, Tibbs is my guy.
Man, I would love it. And I'm kind of in the same boat where I want a bat, and just watching the team this year, it's hard not to want a bat. But, you know, it does feel like it's been too long since the Nats drafted a pitcher. Not because they should, but just because, you know, if we're going off historical trends of Mike Rizzo, I mean, his last first round pitcher was 2020 in Cade Cavalli. It's been almost 5 years.
Yep. That means your Savage is coming.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, at least he has.
I'm wearing my Florida State retro jersey right now, hoping to push the Tibbs Smith agenda. But
I mean, they would be far similar to Cruz last year. They would be far from consolation prizes. I think, you know, the Nats certainly could go wrong. You know, we haven't seen them draft too much from this kind of mid part of the round, first round. Usually it's way at the front or way at the back. You know, we don't have a ton of data on the middle picks. So they could go wrong, but of those kind of guys you just talked about, I would be pretty comfortable with most of them except for Rainer. And that's not because of the player, just more the fit. But if you want to look a little bit further down, I know there's some guys, you know, well, like a Vance Honeycutt. I would say the swing and miss issues probably again, it's a fit issue more than a player thing.
Yeah, I think depending on who drafts him, he's going to be a special player. But the Nats, you know, that's that swing and miss chase rate for the Nats, I just don't like it until we've proven otherwise that we can fix that kind of thing with players. Mm-hmm. But, you know, depending on the team that gets him, I think that, I mean, he is a true five-star tool, and he's got the clutch gene. I mean, nobody
great name can, too. Fantastic
yeah,
name.
Yeah, fantastic name. he is absolutely going to be a possible steal for somebody at 22. Because remember, coming into this year, I think he was ranked, or maybe not the beginning of this year, but the beginning of last year before he had a little bit of a sophomore slump, which, by the way, was a great year for most players. He was supposed to be the number one pick this year.
Yeah, he did have a lot of hype.
Yep, so I think whoever gets him, I mean, this is a true, you know, 30-30 potential guy.
Yeah, I mean, seeing some of those clutch moments, it's hard not to want him. But again, I do think there's a little bit of a fit issue. Just the Nats, I don't trust him to resolve swing and miss issues. But
his floor is probably Jackie Bradley Jr.,
who had a solid career, but it's,
yeah,
you know.
But Vance Honeycutt defensively, he's just going to be, I mean, defensively, he's all, you know, he's going to be one of the best defensive outfielders out there. So, mm-hmm. But yeah.
Yeah. So some other guys, I mean, Tommy White would be available. That's someone that I think it was kind of just a low hanging fruit after drafting Dylan Cruz last year, but he's been connected to the Nats. Brody Brecht is someone I've been pretty intrigued about. He would be available. Carson Benj, I've been following for a while too. Is there someone kind of in that, you know, we'll say like 17 to 27 range that you would identify as a potential underslot guy at 10, someone you're really high on that maybe just didn't have this season that they're capable of having?
I mean, if we're talking about the Nats, because then we got to factor that in, because obviously, yep. Honeycutt's
sure,
without a question, my guy. But if we're talking about the Nats specifically, I wouldn't necessarily draft Honeycutt. I would be looking at Sinjay at 25 there. I love that they've listed him as the, you know, because he can pitch from both sides. But I'm trying to remember, he didn't throw lefty at all, or whichever one he stuck with. He didn't throw the other arm at all for the last three or four games of the season. So I think he's starting to settle on one arm. but he's a really, really intriguing prospect for me. But again, it's the same situation with Brecht. The Nationals have done a really good job with the pitching. Can they fix some of these guys that have a little bit of problems? Like Brody Brecht is electric, but he has major command issues and is really raw. Can the Nationals have they turned the corner on that pitching development, and can they fix him? And if they're confident they can, I don't see a problem with them going that direction, but you would assume they'd be passing on someone like you, Savage. At that point, or, you know, one of you, Savage, Burns, or Smith. So that would be a little bit of a head scratcher.
Yeah, I would agree, but they have, I believe his name is Danny Haas, coming over from Baltimore, who was, you know, frequently utilizing the underslot strategy, excuse me, and to much success. You can't really argue with the results in their farm system, but it remains to be seen what Haas and Rizzo and company will do at 10. But, you know, we have to kind of consider all options with this being their first year together. Moving on to just kind of like the rounds 2 through 4. I saw a mock recently from ESPN that had Jonathan Santucci from Duke going to the Nats in second round. I'd be all in on that. I know he didn't have the most consistent season, but after his first start of the year, I can't remember who that was again. It might have been against Coastal, actually.
It was against Indiana.
At Coastal. That's why. I've been super intrigued by what he can bring. Obviously, another lefty who the Nats, in particular, have had a lot of success developing this past year. Guys, in rounds 2 through 4 that you like a lot.
Yeah, Santucci is I love Santucci. I was selling him to you back then.
Yeah,
I love watching Tucci. He's really, really good. He has some command issues as well. He's gonna walk guys. I think the first time he didn't walk somebody, it was against Florida State at the end of April. So that was the first time he walked less than two guys. I think he walked nobody, but that was the first time he had walked less than two guys. So, you know, he's another electric guy with a couple of command issues, but can miss bats. And coming from that left side, I love that. If we're talking about some guys in that second round range, I also really like Dakota Jordan out of Mississippi State. This is a kid who went off in the Charlottesville regional, and probably would have been the player of the regional had Mississippi State won that regional. He was electric at one point. I think he was 7 for 11 in a couple of games with a couple of home runs. He's another five tool possible guy. Billy Amick, out of Tennessee. Billy Barrels is his nickname. He used to be at Clemson. He was a bit player at Clemson halfway through the year last year, and then just tore it up and hit over 400 and transferred to Tennessee to play third base and only got better. So that's another intriguing guy. I really like, you know, especially the second round, that's where you can get a little bit risky. Like last year when the Nats took Yo-Yo in the second round, I was psyched at that. But if they take Yo-Yo in the first round,
yeah,
I'm mad. You know, not because he was ranked lower, but because, you know, he's more of a risk.
Mm-hmm.
Kalen Culpepper's another arm. These are guys are higher rated in the second round. I mentioned Griff O'Farrell out of Virginia.
Yep, there's your first Virginia mention. I'm surprised it took this long.
Yeah, well, he has been a pleasure to watch. He's from Richmond, but watching him develop into what, you know, as a freshman, he's led off at Virginia and played shortstop all 3 years. And watching him develop into, you know, what should be a pro shortstop at some point, whether he makes to the majors or not, he can play that position. It's going to take an adjustment next year when I cover Virginia as somebody else takes the shortstop role, and O'Farrell had major league range almost, and, you know, was making some plays that you and I would see as routine because we watch a lot of MLB, but we'd have to stop a second and be like, we're watching college. That's not a normal.
That's not normal. That really,
yeah. So the concern with him is some power. He is 6'1", 195. He only hit 3 or 4 home runs this year. He only hit like 1 or 2 last year. He's got doubles pop, but, you know, he's, to me, the thing with Griff is he's got a high baseball IQ and a really, really, really good, you know, approach at the plate and plate vision. He doesn't strike out much. And, you know, if he had developed some of that power, because he hit, I think, 2 home runs in the first weekend. And I was like, oh, man, he might just shoot up the draft boards, because if he's got power all of a sudden, especially with how shallow this shortstop class was, he might shoot up to the first, you know, to the top 10 pick all of a sudden. But, you know, he's an intriguing guy. If we keep going down, you know, another potential Virginia guy that fell down at one point, I think he was talked about going number 10 as a prep bat, was Caleb Bonnemer.
Mm-hmm.
He's an intriguing guy in the later rounds. If you want to take a shot at him, he is committed to Virginia. So I'm hoping that I get to cover him as an ACC guy. Virginia has about 7 picks that could get drafted and not make it to campus. Grounds. It'll be interesting to see how those wind up. But there's a ton of intriguing prospects as you get down there that you can take shots at that I'm excited to see where they go. A Gage Zeal out of Miami. He might have been the best pitcher in the ACC that people didn't realize existed, because Miami didn't have a great year. But he pitched a lot. He pitched in the seventh inning most of the time down there, and a lot of times the team would let him down with some errors. Carson DeMartini out of Virginia Tech, love him. He's got a lot of power, a lot of pop in that bat. He's been a 3-year starter and just crushes the baseball. So yeah, a lot of intriguing options as you go down the draft board. I think one more that I'll mention is. It's interesting, again, because this is a guy a couple of years ago, after his freshman year, would have been up there with Chase Burns as one of the top pitchers, and that's Thatcher Hurd. And he has not panned out as he would like at LSU. I think he's currently in the transfer portal if he doesn't get drafted. He just had a really dominant start up in the Cape, but when he's got his command going, which is not as often as he would like, he is – hard to face. He is a top 10 pitcher in this draft if he can figure out his command more often. Instead, he's sitting down, and you know, MLB Pipeline has him ranked 114.
Yeah, I was going to say, Thatcher Hurd, he closed out the College World Series, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep. He had a really good College World Series last year, and they thought he had taken a step forward. It didn't necessarily look like it had completely panned out this year.
Yeah. All right. So looking at this draft as a whole, do you think it's comparable to recent years? Is it a stronger/deeper class? Like, how do you view this draft class compared to recent years?
You know, it depends on the positions to me. I think it's a really strong draft on the college side. I mean, nine of the top, you know, most of the first round is going to be, you know, college players.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, obviously we've talked about it's, you know, lighter on some arms and lighter on shortstops and prep bats, but you know, it's not like last year where you had a pretty good variety, but you have a ton of great college arms. So, you know, time's going to tell, you know, there's been times where we thought we had a really deep draft. Turns out we didn't. So,
this is true. This is true. Looking at the 22 draft with, you know, Jacob Berry and Elijah Green in them, and Drew Jones was like everyone's number one, and turns out Jackson Holliday was better. Was that the same draft? But yeah.
I thought that was a really deep draft, and you know,
really so strong. So far not great.
Yeah.
So,
and then there was the one with Senzel.
Oh yeah. You know, what was that?
16 or 17?
16, I think.
Yeah, that was not a great draft. I think they've produced one All-Star appearance. You know, they may have more now from this year, but I'm not sure. I don't think so, but
probably not.
You know, it's going to be hard to tell. I just try to get excited about, you know, the current draft, and you know, it's exciting to see these guys who I've covered all year get that opportunity at the next level, and as they chase their dream.
Yeah, absolutely. Can't wait. Draft is happening this Sunday. It happens during All-Star Week now, which I think is cool. It puts more spotlight on the draft itself, which it'll take some time to build it up to the level of the NFL draft, certainly, and the NBA draft, but the MLB draft still very cool. Although there was something kind of special about seeing a guy get drafted during the College World Series. Like, they would be in center field and they're like, oh yeah, this guy just got drafted in the third round by the Giants or whatever. Like, there was something like oddly, you know, satisfying about that, but I like that it's during the All-Star game or All-Star week.
I liked that it was earlier, because now, you know, right now we're sitting there, I have no idea. People are like, what's this team going to be like next year? I was like, well, we're still waiting to hear on who's going to get drafted, who's not.
Right.
You've got the college recruits who might not make it to campus because they might get drafted too high and get too good of an offer to turn down, and then you've got fringe guys that again might come back to campus, might not. So you're still trying to figure that out. It's, you know, July, and you've still got the transfer portal. It's, you can't enter it unless you've had a coaching change in the last couple of weeks, but you can still, if you've already entered, you're still available to get out there. Tennessee just got two guys from Ole Miss today that infielder Andrew Fisher, and then an arm Liam Doyle.
Yeah,
so it's not fair.
Rich get richer.
But you know, they're still trying to figure out what it's going to be like. And then you've got all the, you know, when I'm trying to cover the Cape Cod League, you've got guys that go in there that are draft eligible. They only play for a couple of weeks, and then they're like, okay, we did our last little bit of you know, stuff for scouts, so we're out. So, you know, there's pros and cons to both sides. It was really cool to see guys getting drafted and still playing for their schools. That was really cool. You could get people who were excited to watch these guys.
Yeah, for sure. Just to, you know, as we wrap up this episode, just a quick sneak peek to next year. Who would be the, you know, maybe not consensus number one, but who are some of the top guys to watch for next year? Because, you know, again, back to the Nats thing, it's looking like they will be lottery eligible again. So, you know, we hopefully maybe we'll be at the top of the draft. Who are some names to watch?
Oh man, that you didn't prepare me for this one.
I'm so sorry.
Man, I am really excited about you know, a number of guys. Jamie Arnold is somebody I've already mentioned a couple of times. You know, obviously, Ethan Holiday is good.
That's
I believe
that's the name I was waiting for you to talk about.
Yeah, I would have forgotten because of the because he's a prep bat. Obviously, true. I would imagine he's technically committed to Oklahoma State, where his uncle coaches, and that's where Jackson also committed. But I don't think he's going.
Right.
Jace LaViolette of Texas A&M.
Mm-hmm.
Cam Cannarella, Clemson. Center fielder, just very, very good. You ready for this one?
Let's do it.
Caden Bodine.
Let's go! Coastal rep, baby.
Yeah. I knew that would get you excited. You know, and an intriguing one is Henry Ford at UVA. He'll be a draft eligible sophomore. This is a guy on opening weekend as a freshman. Ryan Zimmerman was just blown away by this kid's size as a freshman. Cause he's like, I wasn't like that when I was a freshman. So, you know, that's something. And this is a kid that wasn't highly drafted or highly recruited out of high school and, is a consensus freshman All-American. He's somebody who could play third base, but because of the way Virginia's got guys at other positions, he's been playing first base, but he's really, really good. I obviously got to watch him a ton. My favorite memory of his is it was against UNC and he hit 3 home runs. And UVA is not a very it's typically pitcher friendly. So for him to do that was pretty impressive. 17 home runs as a freshman. Broke the freshman record. Yeah. And so
not too bad at all.
It'll be intriguing to see if he keeps shooting up the board, but yeah, there's a ton of talent there. But yeah, Jamie Arnold's probably my favorite arm. But you know, again, we saw how much changed with this draft. For sure. So because James Tibbs, Christian Moore, those guys weren't in the top 20 conversation. It'll be really interesting to see.
Yeah, for sure. Monty, appreciate you joining us. Where can everyone find you, and what do you have going on over the next couple months?
You can find me at Monty2740. Right now I am covering the Cape, and I might be doing some covering of the Cincinnati Reds for the Red Blog Machine on the Fan Sided Network that you're familiar with.
Nice.
But yeah, I'm looking to go up to the Cape towards the end of the month for the All-Star game, get some content up there. There's a couple of guys up there. I was talking to the Florida State shortstop today, Alex Lodis. He and his cousin just transferred from Augusta College to Georgia Tech. I'm excited to see them play each other because they're really close and they're, you know, I'm calling it the Lodi Bowl. but I'm excited to go up there and cover some of those guys. Drew Burris was a top 50 prospect last year, but because of his size, he didn't get the attention he deserved, and he's been a unanimous freshman player of the year for Georgia Tech, and he's just an awesome guy. I can't wait to, you know, see him, talk to him. I got to interview him in April, but he's a big fan of some of our stuff too. So that's really cool for, you know, him being involved with us on Twitter and stuff. So hoping to have him on the show as well for our ACC Central show.
Yeah, that would be awesome. But looking forward to it. And obviously, if you don't already, please give Monty a follow. He does great work. Can't wait to see what he comes up with next. But in the meantime, that does it for this episode. Be sure to tune into the MLB draft this Sunday, as well as all the All-Star festivities. And in the meantime, be sure to check us out on Twitter at DistrictBSB and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Find us on TikTok at District Baseball. We appreciate you listening. Monty, appreciate you joining us, and we will catch you guys next time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.